the visual aspects is still very strong when we make a record. The two things are very connected.
It's not your typical stage build at all.
There's no denying that the overall look is just unbelievable.
Not as unbelievable as this show!
Welcome to Cord Killers, where we are on a five-year mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever damn device you choose. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Brian Brushwood, and holy cow, does that mean we're in our last year of the show? We finally, this is our fifth year, man.
I don't know. Will we get renewed for another five-year mission? Who can say?
That's up to our lovely patrons, but more importantly, what was that we were looking at right at the beginning there, Bryce?
That was a series on Hulu VR called On Stage. This is a VR short series where they follow the day in a life of a band as they go on tour. So that episode follows Phoenix, the rock band. They also have episodes with Lil Wayne and Major Lazer. This thing looks really cool. It's like 8 to 11 minutes. If you have Hulu VR, which is on Sony PlayStation, Google Daydream, Rift, Gear VR and stuff, that seems like something you should check out.
This also seems
on stage, and then it's like you're on stage with the band.
And it's part documentary too. Like there's part stage because the Phoenix one, if you're only listening, has this big mirror stage setup. So I'm sure there's footage of it there, but also the setup and the day in the life of.
I think this is a smart play because we have yet to see narrative fiction break out in VR you know, even little vignettes are challenging. Certainly pornography does fine in VR.
We've yet to see video games really break out in VR or narrative fiction.
Or literally anything, right? But I will say that the fly on the wall experience is perfect for VR. If you want to be there, if you're a fan of this thing and you want to just be a fly on the wall, well, guess what? You can not interact and be that fly on the wall.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you who's no fly on the wall is our fantastic guest, a writer and comedian, formerly of crack.com. Ladies and gentlemen, put your digital hands together for Daniel O'Brien. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Dude, I'm so, so excited. I guess, Tom, shall we begin?
Well, how do you two know each other?
Oh, I we don't. I've been a fan of his for a decade on Cracked, doing all the videos, and then and finally he made the mistake on the Small Beans podcast of saying I will appear on literally anyone's podcast, and I was I immediately, like, while it was still playing, I wrote him. I was like, come join
challenge
us on
accepted,
Cord Killers,
sir. Excellent.
It's,
well, Daniel,
I'm
thank you
on
for
this podcast
us.
Because I'm already a fan of your work because I did say that, and someone reached out to me via Twitter. And they were like, I run a hockey podcast. Will you be on our hockey podcast? I was like, I don't know anything about hockey. Is that okay? Yeah, it's fine. So now I'm going to do a hockey podcast.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I do have a feeling that you know a bit about television and movies, though.
So I do. This is much better for me.
Excellent. Well, then let's start with our primary target. So, Brian.
Yeah.
Turns out M. Night Shyamalan is going to executive produce a new psychological thriller TV series for Apple to be written by Tony Bagsalop of 24 Extended Universe fame. This brings the Apple lineup to M. Night Shyamalan, TV series from Damien Chazelle, the director of La La Land, an anthology series based on amazing stories from Steven Spielberg, a space drama series from Battlestar Galactica creator Ronald D. Moore, a drama about a network morning show, executive produced and starring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, a futuristic drama from Francis Lawrence, the director of the last three Hunger Games movie, and Apple just hired Angelica Guerra, Sony Picture Television's production leader for Latin America and U.S. Hispanic content. She joins former Sony presidents Jamie Ehrlicht and Zach Von Amberg and former Sony vice presidents Max Aronson, Kim Rosenfeld, and Ali Woodruff. So, how are you feeling about Apple's future TV plans now?
So this is the interesting thing. And I will, trust me, nobody will be happier to eat crow and turn out to be totally wrong than me. But I remember saying that Google Plus was going to take over social media because you don't bet against Google because they're like the Borg because they have unlimited resources. They got all the money in the world. They'll just keep on going until they get it right. Turns out I was wrong and they eventually gave up. Apple is so far behind in this space. They're behind Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Vudu. I mean, it's like I don't want to say I don't believe they can do it. I could just say they got a lot of catching up to do. Let me ask, Daniel, how excited are you about the Apple TV lineup these days? How much headspace do they take up in your mind?
They take up no headspace. Like I think from learning from your podcast, their hit was Carpool Karaoke. Was that the Apple TV hit?
That's the one watchable show that they've done.
That's the one watchable show. That's the only thing that has like penetrated my brain. And I think that's because it was born from another show that already existed that I was familiar with. And I just saw on either Deadline or Tube Filter when it popped up, it was like, Carpool Karaoke is going to be a show on Apple TV. And I was like, I don't know if I have that anywhere.
I take it back. They've done some pretty good music documentaries as well, but those aren't really series. So
right. But it doesn't enter my head. Like Apple enters my head as a huge company, obviously a huge tech company, but it doesn't enter my head as a huge tech original content company right now. It's not there in the Amazon or Netflix or Hulu space or anything like that.
Well, and I think this is the part that gives me the most pause is it's tough for me because as we've talked about before, they are consolidating separate ecosystems. Amazon in our house early on, I bought 5 or 6 Amazon movies. And then all of a sudden it became like, oh, wait, I should decide where to buy my movies so all my movies are in one place. And so I just fell deeper and deeper into the Amazon ecosystem. Now, I'm sure there's some number of people who are equally invested in the Apple ecosystem. But what are the odds, no matter how good all this programming is, because it's not like they're going to make it available on the Amazon ecosystem. They're going to try to keep it exclusive, I assume. And I just don't see myself crawling out of the black hole that I'm already trapped in.
All right. Well, hold on. Let's look at what's there that's comparable and what Apple's done in the past real quick.
Okay.
What's there is Netflix, which started with a bunch of back catalog and then said, hey, we're going to do originals, and slowly sprinkled in originals until now you think of Netflix as a place for originals. Hulu similarly was like, we're the place with originals from the broadcast networks, and tried and tried and tried and tried to have their own originals catch on until finally they got a couple that have caught on. Apple's doing it differently by saying, we tried a couple of things. Forget about those. those are just kind of, that's like our version of YouTube. Like those are different. Now we're going to do like high quality cable to broadcast level television shows. And we're going to just rack up a bunch of them at once. So what do they do with that? In the past, what Apple's done is we're going to come out with the music store that is so good that you'll want to buy our MP3 player, which is actually less functional and late to the game than other MP3 players, but saves the company, as it turns out. What are they planning to do here? Where they're basically building up, they're saying, huh, so what everybody did that was successful was get some originals. We already have a huge iTunes library where you can buy the old stuff. We couldn't get the cable networks on board for a live show, so we'll just build up a bunch of compelling originals and
underwear pants gnomes.
Sell Apple TVs? I mean, I don't know.
So, okay, I'm going to give you the floor, Daniel, real quick.
Is Apple TV the iPod in this scenario, I guess?
But understand, part of what made the iPod such a success is that the music scene was so weakened at that moment that Steve Jobs, a domineering figure, was able to come in and say, musicians, labels, shut up, $1 a track. That's how it's going to be. Now sign here. And then they all did it. So it was the Apple Music Store flourished because of its completeness, not because of its unique original content, or at least that's the way I read it. I don't know. I don't know. I don't, Daniel, save me. I don't know. I don't know what to think.
It's always really tough to bet against Apple, but I will say from a content perspective, like I don't think M. Night Shyamalan, if we're trying to create equivalencies between what Apple is doing now and what Netflix did many years ago, M. Night Shyamalan is not...
not the strongest get.
And it's not David Fincher doing House of Cards, which was already a show in the UK that was doing well. And Damien Chazelle is a good choice, but again, like we haven't seen a show from him. We don't know if it's going to be a good thing. Like Apple seems like they're doing a model that I've seen before, but they're not picking the best hitters, I guess.
I wonder if in the course of all of the meetings that Apple supposedly took with each of the content companies trying to get them on board to a live streaming service, they wanted to be a cable replacement service they delivered through Apple TV. I wonder if they were able to get them to agree to a lesser agreement that says, okay, but what if we get some access to back catalog in such a way that we're not actually competing with Netflix for rights? What we're doing is saying, if you pay us a certain amount a month, you can get temporary access to the iTunes Store catalog, which is essentially what Apple Music is, right? You pay a certain amount a month and you get access to the iTunes Music catalog without having to buy the individual tracks. What if they were able to do that? And this is just the frosting on the top. It's like, and you'll also get these amazing Apple originals, but there'll be a bunch of NBC, Sci-Fi Network, ABC, Fox, et cetera, content in there as well.
I mean, certainly not outside the realm of possibility. I got to tell you, though, I just keep coming back to the fact that this is our fifth year of doing Cord Killers. Before that, we did Framerate. I'm pretty sure within the first year of Framerate, the buzzword was Apple TV. It's going to be a thing. Get ready.
Oh, Apple TV came out before we started Framerate. Yeah, absolutely.
It's been
to break out since 2008.
Exactly, right? So I don't know. It's at some point, you really do get to a place where the head start is just too far and you can't catch up. And certainly we saw that with Google Plus, which I thought was a very serviceable social network, but its timing was unfortunate.
We saw it with IBM and laptops, and we saw it with, you know, Creative Nomad and MP3 players. You're right, Brian.
Yeah. And I feel like if Apple had come out and said, we just secured the rights to David Benioff and Weiss's next project or the Game of Thrones spinoff, then we'd be having a different conversation. Then it's like, that's a big swing. That's going to attract a whole lot of people. But it's a mini series or a series from M. Night Shyamalan, which just seems like you're too late and you're backing the wrong horse.
More importantly, they're all Rorschach tests. They're all blank canvases that we're expected to project, like, what do you love about Battlestar Galactica? Imagine that. That's what we got. And it's like, well, we're not seeing that. So I don't know what that means. That's a really good point.
No, I think you're right, because it's a lot of big but not biggest names doing the thing you haven't seen them do exactly before, even though they did a great thing.
Well put.
Which I wonder, and this is a totally wacky thing that speaks to my background, and you guys can say it's insane or not. Everyone seems like they're doing that model where we're going to get Jill Soloway, we're going to get this big name for Netflix, this big name for HBO, da-da-da-da-da. There is no one that is really emerging right now as the platform that is going to incubate new and exciting voices. And I wonder if that would have been a smarter strategy for Apple or anyone who is trying to make a name for themselves.
That they're doing that and that stuff isn't getting the press, because these are all leaks anyway. So,
Well, but also I think that YouTube, I don't want to say has a monopoly on that space, but they're certainly best positioned to take. YouTube is the only place where they have a minor leagues that they're able to escalate into the major leagues with the YouTube Red originals. So it may be that Apple's deciding to zag where others have zigged.
Well, and the one thing I will say is this Sony team, which is essentially the Sony production team from Sony Television, has some hits under their belt. Things like The Walking Dead and such. Mm-hmm. So those are bigger names in a sense than the actual names attached to the TV shows that have been leaked.
Fair enough.
All right. Got a message here from James C. Smith in Irvine, Brian.
Yeah.
He says, Brian, message to your listeners. I am tired of hearing about the Spoiler Rim project and ready to start listening to it.
What?
So I just upped my pledge by $5. We just need 63 other fans to do the same thing. Come on, Cord Killers fans, put your money where your mouth is and let's make this thing happen.
That's a good point. As you guys know, if we hit 1890, either in number of patrons or amount per episode, or sorry, 1850. Sorry, 1850.
We'll take the 90.
No, yeah, it's inflation, people. Get used to it. then we are going to organize, and it is make no mistake, this is a big undertaking. We're talking about resorting all of our Spoiler Rim times for the last 8 years and
cutting
making it up so that whatever you watch, you can get our reactions just after we watched it in a nice little doc.
RSS feed.
RSS feed.
It is called an RSS feed.
That's what,
the backbone of podcasting.
Science.
Let me tell you about podcasting.
Oh, yeah. No, this sounds great.
It's really simple syndication.
So who invented it? All right. So, yeah, please join James C. Smith. Take the James C. Smith challenge and head to patreon.com/courtgillers. Let's talk about how to watch.
How much do you...
Oh.
What's that, Daniel?
I was going to tweet out the link for people, and I wanted to know how much you needed again. Well, what's the number?
We only need 64 people to pledge $5 per episode. No problem. We can just whip those up, right?
On it.
All right. Nice. Nice.
Excellent. All right. So MoviePass, it is a way to watch what you want when you want, right? Because the idea with MoviePass is you pay a single fee per month, then you can go watch any number of movies at any theater, sort of. We've talked in the past about how MoviePass blocked a few theaters. Well, now some MoviePass users started to notice that the service wouldn't let them buy tickets to Red Sparrow. In a statement to Slash Film, MoviePass said, "We occasionally remove some films from our ticketing inventory in some markets for a limited time, similar to how we organically promote films in certain markets to better understand member behavior. Maybe trying to demonstrate not only the benefits of plug-in movies like I, Tonya or Death Wish," says TechCrunch, or The Verge, rather, "but how it can negatively impact tickets sales as well is what's going on." Now, Bryce, you noticed that even if Red Sparrow isn't listed, you can still buy the ticket?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way MoviePass works is you check in, you know, and it puts money on your card for about a half hour. And MoviePass doesn't, the point of sale transaction doesn't know what movie you watch. It just knows how much a ticket costs. Mm-hmm. And so if you say, "Oh, I'm going to go watch Game Night," and you go up to the counter and instead buy a ticket for Red Sparrow, no one's going to know. So I think there's, you might have a moral feeling about it, but the fact
right.
of the matter
so
is...
So there's a workaround technically where you could see Red Sparrow anyway, but they're not making it easy.
Well, in fact, when you go to the MoviePass listing, it almost always has unlisted movie set, and it says, if your movie is not listed in our app, pick this and just buy your ticket. So mm-hmm. it's not like that workflow isn't something that they're aware of.
But I'm certain we're all aware that having a menu is an extremely powerful tool. And it sounds like, assuming that we take them at their word and that they're running a test, they're sort of testing to figure out just how strong they are with a million subscribers. How can they affect movie sales? And unfortunately for Jennifer Lawrence, that's a bummer that she happened to be the test case for them.
Yeah, and everyone else on that film, right? Mitch Lowe, who's the CEO of MoviePass, was also speaking to the Entertainment Finance Forum about how MoviePass monetizes data. So this whole thing about we'll promote some movies like I, Tonya, and we'll try to dissuade people from seeing other movies like Red Sparrow is a way to show off that they have data and they can affect what happens with people's behavior. He was saying at this forum, "We watch how you drive from home to the movies. We watch where you go afterwards." Now, that sounds pretty much like a surveillance state. The terms of service say that location is only used when selecting a theater and, quote, only to be used as a means to develop, improve, and personalize the service. So it doesn't seem like they're doing what he says according to their terms of service. If they are, they're breaking their terms of service. But his point was, we want to start selling stuff to the restaurants near the theater and the parking lots so that we encourage people when they go to see a movie using MoviePass to patronize these other places as well.
All right. I have a thought on this, but before I hand the mic over to Daniel, I just want to say, if there's an award for the most poorly phrased thing to say in a public forum of 2018 so far, I'd like to hand it. Well, actually, there's plenty of other contenders. Daniel, how concerned are you about the handing over of your private data of where you go?
I'm very concerned, and I feel like this is a lot of tech companies do this, and it's such a betrayal of what you sign up for, because the promise that you sign up for MoviePass is, hey, you like movies. What if you paid X amount of dollars and you got to see one movie a day or a week or whatever? Like, this is the deal that we're setting up for you. And then smash cut to a month or so later, and they were like, hey, you still want these movies, right? Well, we want to know where you eat, and like, how do you go to the bathroom, and like, where do you dress, and like, who are you dating? Like, we want all this other information. We're going to help you by collecting all this other information. It just feels like a profound betrayal of what you signed up for, and I hate that.
So if I can subject myself to the enmity of the entire internet, if I could play devil's advocate just for a second, do you think people in general, and do you specifically, oppose the collection of data in the aggregate or in the specific? By which I mean, like, I hate the idea of MoviePass being able to say Brian Brushwood went here and then there and then to the other place. Like, that disgusts me. But if it was sufficiently anonymized, I suddenly am fine. In fact, I would pay money to read a report of here are the movie habits in general of 1 million subscribers to MoviePass. Like, for some reason, that doesn't sound so bad to me, and possibly even awesome in the benefits that it could have as far as, you know, everything from traffic flow from one place to another to pricing options and all this other stuff. Like, I guess maybe it's the would-be economist in me that can see the upside of all this data. So it's like, I don't want to shut off that fire hose of data. But on the other hand, I too am equally horrified by the idea of being individually tracked by a corporate entity.
I would ask what for you and like your personal consuming habits has been the most effective utilization of an algorithm or a company that has been tracking what you do and meaningfully provided you with something? Like to give personal examples, like I haven't found that really anywhere. Amazon is a company where I bought a coffee machine and then for the next 6 months they offered me more coffee machines.
Yes.
And that hasn't been helpful for me. Digitally social enough that I feel like if someone was paying attention, a human could look at everything that I'm consuming and then meaningfully provide something for me. But I haven't seen that bear fruit anywhere. Facebook's algorithms haven't ever shown me something that was a step ahead of what I'm thinking, which
I have an example of something where I will willingly let a service track where I go because I get something out of it.
Is it Waze?
Personally, not even an aggregate. I want to personally be tracked by this company. Any navigation app I've ever used.
Yeah. So yeah, Waze does nail it.
Waze, Google Maps, whatever. Like, it's weird. You're like, okay, but that's not what we're talking about. But it is, and we want to dismiss it because we're like, yes, but that's useful, right?
No,
like,
I agree.
And that's, I know they're tracking me very obviously because it's a navigation app. That's what the stuff should be like. As long as I know it and it's really useful and it's so obvious that I almost don't want to count it, that's okay. Otherwise, I don't get it.
I would love if everything was like that. Like, I love maps, a navigation system where someone on Facebook sends me, like, here's my address, and then I get in my car and I take out my phone and I click maps. And they're like, hey, we think you want to go to this place. I was like, yep, that's right. I don't care how you got that information. That is where I want to go.
And lately right I've now. Noticed it when the Google Calendar app pops up. It is like, hey, this appointment's happening. It's over there. It's going to be 15 minutes, light traffic. You probably want to get on the way right now. Like, I'm like, thank you. That's also scary, but thank you.
Nag, but, you know. TikTok. So I think there's two possibilities here. One is that MoviePass is doing something in its app that its terms of service doesn't allow. I think that is possible. And if that's the case, MoviePass is going to have a huge problem on its hands. The other is that Mitch Lowe said a thing to a group of potential investors and clients that isn't exactly what's going on because he didn't think for some reason that it would make it into TechCrunch. And he's wrong. And that what he meant was, we know where you live because you give us your address. We know some of the places you shop because of other interactions with the app. We obviously know what theaters you go to. We compile all that with your permission, and then we get a purview of your habits. But that explanation doesn't sound as snappy when you're talking to the entertainment finance forum.
So
he fudged it.
I don't think it's my place to say who, but I was hanging out with an evening with the founder of a major movie chain who was talking about their rewards program. And I think there's a shorthand you use when you're speaking peer-to-peer with other business professionals. And you say things that out of context do sound horrific, like we know where blank, 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 blank. You don't mean that you know everything so much as you want to say the data set includes features like this, this, and this, so offers can be made correctly. And I want to think it's that kind of bro to bro business talk that was just happening? Question mark.
Yeah, because if he actually watches how you drive home to the movies,
Then we're in real trouble.
That's not good, man. That's not good, Mitch Lowe. Also, we got an email from Kevin Hills who says, after the recent news of MoviePass not allowing certain movies in certain areas to be used with their service, I canceled it. No matter how much I dislike people using their service without seeing movies, I found this far worse. Now, with happier news for the first time, since I canceled DirecTV, I didn't have to sit in the kitchen to watch the Oscars. I used YouTube TV. I really enjoyed the interface.
Right.
So there you go. On the one hand, MoviePass died for poor Kevin, but he has been freed by YouTube TV, it looks like. Well done. All right, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location, location, location.
Under Surveillance. So coming soon, we got a few items you might want to put on your TV watching calendar. Hashtag War Games is one of this new generation of interactive series. This one's from Echo, E-K-O. The creator of Her Story, Sam Barlow, set to hit Steam, Vudu.com, HelloEcho.com, and the Echo iOS app on March 14th. It is based on the original War Games idea, but it's updated for a modern feel. And it's that interactive storytelling where there's one story. It's not choose your own adventure per se, but you can choose how you see the story. You can follow certain characters through it and get a different experience depending on which ones you follow. It's all about a group of hackers worldwide trying to teach countries a lesson, but the lesson gets out of hand.
Daniel, we've talked on this show before about how I get a weird anxiety about being handed a job. It's television / movies is a special place where it's like, I want an expert, somebody who's better at storytelling than me, to guide me through an experience. And being given a choice, to me, just like now, it feels like a video game, which feels a little bit like work. And I don't want to say cringe from it, but maybe recoil a little bit. Is this an enhancement, feature, or bug, this whole picking your own journey?
To me, it's enhancement. I'm very excited about that because I come from being a huge comic book guy. And like when this doesn't establish creds because it's a very famous one, but when Civil War came out, they had the main Marvel Civil War comic storyline, but they also had, here's what Spider-Man is going through during Civil War. Here's what the newspapers, like there was an entire series that was Frontline that was just the newspapers covering the events of Civil War in the Marvel comic book universe. And I like being able to dip into all of those things and get like, because I'm a completist maniac that I want to see everything. So I'm excited about that. But I would also, in any of those like choose your own who you're going to follow thing, I'm going to follow all of them.
That's my worry is anytime there's a choice, I'm afraid I'm making the wrong choice. But you just totally reframed it in a way that I love, because I'm one of the 12 people on the planet who deeply love Secret Wars 2 and following the adventures of the Beyonder with every character in the Marvel Universe and so on. So if I wonder how much interface plays in on this, because if it's something where it just plays a thing and then says make a choice, that's going to be tougher for me to get in as opposed to a library where I'm just sort of diving and getting the whole story bit by bit.
Well, remember, you're not making a choice. You're following different viewpoints.
Yeah. And in fact, we're watching on the preview right now where it's like the other ones play all in real time and you're able to jump from one to the other as stuff happens.
Yeah, so I wonder, I think they're still trying to figure out the best interface for this to make it feel like you're just watching a story with a little bit of lean forward rather than work. Because I think you're right, Ryan. It doesn't want to feel like work, and you don't want to feel like I'm going to have to go back and rewatch with the other choice to really understand the story.
So one of the things that made the original War Game so great is that that was an entire generation's or a substantial chunk of an entire generation's first introduction to the concept of hacking. And I wonder if there's a core fundamental truth that they'll be able to bring to the populace through this project as well.
Yeah. Also, my cousin's elbow is in one of the scenes because they shot it where he worked.
Oh, really? Wait, this one?
No, the original one.
Either way, that's awesome.
Ralph Breaks the Internet. Wreck-It Ralph 2 has a trailer out.
Wait,
I'm sorry. Your cousin was just like there, and they shot around your cousin's elbow because he was working there.
Yeah, they shot at one of the U.S. Air Force bases, so he had to be in the room.
Oh, that's so crazy! All right.
So they used him as an extra, basically. Yeah. Ralph Breaks the Internet has got a trailer out coming Thanksgiving, and the whole premise is that Wreck-It Ralph gets onto the internet.
It's a good premise, and I suspect it'll be a good movie just like the first one. But I was a little bit underwhelmed by this trailer. This trailer felt like a lot of the beats fell flat. Is it just me?
No, I loved the first one, and I was so pleasantly surprised by it. And this trailer really made my face red. I was very embarrassed by it, and I'm just going on pure faith of the first one being good, that I trust this one will be good, and it's just a bad trailer, but man, this is not getting me excited for this movie.
I have noticed that kids' movies in general tend to have unbelievably bad trailers, even when they're genuinely good movies. Although largely, certainly Pixar seems to dodge that bullet. I would say Disney's kind of 50-50, because even Zootopia didn't look nearly as amazing as the movie actually was, when you looked at the trailers.
Gaucho in our chat room says, it isn't a trailer. This is these scenes are finished.
Bing, bing, bing. Well put, Gaucho.
And that definitely could explain it, because I was bemused. I it didn't bother me, but I'm like, these all seem like the obvious things, right?
It's also, I worry about anything that is, or I don't worry about it. It's just a really bold choice to tackle anything that is going to be about the internet when you're anthropomorphizing websites, which I imagine is what they're going to be doing. Because we had a 6 or 7 year series at Cracked that was called Internet Party, where every time we did it, it was, let's anthropomorphize websites, and now they're interacting together at a party. Now they're interacting at an intervention or a funeral, whatever we did. And having done that, I've learned how immediately you date yourself when you try to take a character that is a website. And so when I see the Wreck-It Ralph thing, it's like, here's a character, here's a location, it's IMDb as a place. And I'm just worried that, like, man, that might be gone by the time your show comes out, or it might have a completely new identity by the time your show comes out.
To me, from the trailer, like maybe they were trying to head that off at the pass by intentionally dating it late 90s, because he's using the late 90s style iMac for all we know, like you could hear the dial up sounds and all that stuff, and it's just a flash frozen piece of 20 years ago history.
There is a YouTube Red logo in
Mind. Let me just yank that idea out and I'm done.
Yeah. I was going to say Silicon Valley's smart because they update their credits every season to add new startups that have become popular since the last season came out, so that you actually are dating the season, but it's like kind of fixing you, like, oh, that's when Alibaba started to get popular. Okay, that's why that's in there. Right. Oh, now Uber is
the
lift
balloon crushing the Uber balloon. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, a teaser for House of Cards is out, basically just showing Robin Wright as Claire standing in the Oval Office. Show returns for its final seasons on Netflix this autumn. It's a ways away, so I didn't expect to see much. I'm not sure this really did anything for me, though.
Yeah, and unfortunately, being somebody who petered out and ran out of steam at the beginning of last season, or maybe even the season before it, I don't know. I don't know.
Renewals. Sci-Fi has renewed The Magicians for a fourth 13-episode season to premiere in 2019. And not shockingly, Netflix has renewed Black Mirror for a fifth season. Both of these please me very much. I think Magicians may be one of the more underrated shows on television. It gets better every season. And it's a really tight, if very young, magical fantasy show with a great sensibility. And of course, everybody loves Black Mirror.
Daniel, you appear to be a fan of The Magicians, yes?
I was, this is just a personal thing that I love the show, and Olivia Taylor-Dudley, who is the blonde magic gal, she's part of this Los Angeles early kids comedy scene that I grew up in. She's with 5 Second Films, and they're all friends of ours from the crack day, so always very excited to see internet kids make good, and she's incredibly talented, and we're glad that the show is getting the love that it deserves.
Is Magicians fairly bingeable? Because I've heard Tom praise it for several years, but I've not been willing to jump in just yet. And also, is it appropriate for my 14-year-old girl?
It's definitely bingeable.
About that second one.
But also, it takes place on a college, so
I know it'll be more adult. 18-year-old
girl, do you have one of those?
Not yet. Give me 4 years. I'm cooking right.
Okay, so a couple of development announcements. BBC announced it's picked up a 6-part Discworld series. Deadline says it goes under the working title The Watch. the production company that was founded by the late author Terry Pratchett of the Discworld series, Narrativia, is co-producing, and Simon Allen of Das Boot and the Musketeers fame may be on board to write. That's not confirmed. The Watch is supposedly a procedural crime series, but set in Discworld's main city of Ankh-Morpork.
Discworld is not Ringworld, right?
No.
Okay.
Ringworld's Larry Niven. Discworld, Terry Pratchett. Ringworld, not funny. Terry Pratchett, very funny.
Got it. Also, both discs or rings?
No, is this like a personal preference now?
I don't know. I only read Ringworld, so I haven't read Discworld. I need some footing to stand on.
There's like 500 Discworld novels, too, and you can jump in at any one. They're not like serialized.
They're all standalone. Great. Excellent.
Yeah. And Daily Show correspondent Hasan Minhaj will host at least 32 episodes of a weekly talk show on Netflix. More talk shows coming to Netflix. The show will, quote, explore the modern cultural and political landscapes with depth and sincerity this time.
Okay.
What's that noise about?
Well, I mean, it's are they heading off at the pass? The second time I've used that phrase. Is a lack of sincerity a big problem that Netflix is finally?
This talk show will have depth and sincerity.
So some have had depth, some have had sincerity. Finally, just nailing them both.
No, I think Netflix is just like, put as many talk shows out there as possible. We'll find one that sticks.
Got it.
All right, let's talk about what we're watching. Daniel, starting with you, what have you been putting on your screens lately?
The Tick on Amazon Prime. Have you guys talked about that before?
Yeah, we've talked about it a bit. I have sat on the fence, which is, I guess apparently my job is to just sit here and be dour and think everything's not going to be good. But I've heard mixed reviews, but are you enjoying it?
I love it so much. I was super not on board when I heard that it was being made a couple of years ago, because I grew up on the Tick cartoon show and I love that very much. And then they made the Patrick Warburton series that I didn't love too much. And then when they announced that they were making another live action Tick series, I thought, what the fuck are we doing? Why do we need to, can I say?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, good.
You did.
What the heck are we doing? Why are we doing this again? So I put it off for a while, and then I watched the first half of the season begrudgingly and loved it so much. And the second half just came out like a week and a half ago, and I consumed it immediately. It's really exciting to me. It's silly adult superhero live action show that you don't get like silly adult things very much anymore. And the Tick is that it's really high stakes because you're dealing with superhero drama, and it's also very low stakes family drama of Arthur as the nervous, awkward guy who's like trying to be a superhero but also trying to hide it from his family. And I really like that mix of low stakes, high stakes, and low language of a very casual person versus the high language of these larger than life Shakespearean superheroes and supervillains. It's just fun and engaging, and like the stakes are crazy high most of the time, and every single episode ends on a cliffhanger. And it's just a very engaging, it's a quick watch too. You can really burn through it. Episodes are 22 to 24 minutes long, and the jokes per second in this show are great.
Did you happen to see Future Man on Hulu?
No, that's Josh Hutcherson, right? Is that mm-hmm. that show?
Yeah. I love Future Man, and a lot of what you're saying makes me feel like it maybe resonates on the same frequency. I'll have to give the Tick a chance.
Oh, great. Good.
I'll get off check the that fence, Brian.
No, I live on this fence. I built this little tree fort here. I throw fruit.
Anything else you want to mention, Daniel?
I mean, I feel like it's okay with you guys because you guys are watching Deadwood right now. I'm rewatching The Wire for like the ninth time.
The Wire was our first library show that we both, having not watched it and having had the whole world tell us that we had to watch it, we sat down from scratch. In fact, if we hit our goal, that'll be the first spoiler in project to get all aligned on there.
I was going to say that too, but then I was like, can we?
We can make that the first one.
Cord Killers.
Yeah, it's Creative Commons.
Okay.
All right. That stuff is Creative Commons. We're just linking to stuff, and it's
sure,
all
we have links. Links are easy. You can do links
exactly.
all day long.
So how far into this rewatching of The Wire are you?
I'm season 3, episode 5 or 6, maybe 6 or 7. I'm not sure. It's can I do spoilers?
Okay. Yeah, you could get spoiler alert.
No.
No,
yeah,
no,
no. Oh. We don't do spoilers on the show, Brian. I keep trying to tell you that.
This is why we moved everything to spoiler in time.
Show for all spoilers.
Right. We got in trouble with the fans.
What kind of spoiler are you talking about, Daniel? Though, like
the episode when season three, when character blank gets out of blank and meets blank.
Oh yeah. No, I remember that. Yeah. That's a good part. The big question I wanted to ask is if there are any insights that you're getting on your second run through that you missed the first time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And one that I completely missed that, do you guys follow The Ringer at all? That website?
No.
Oh, it's great. The Ringer is great for pop culture and sports and tech stuff. But Che Serrano, who is one of my favorite writers, drew parallels between a thing that happens to the character Wallace, Michael B. Jordan, in season one, and a thing that happens to Stringer Bell, played by Idris Elba, in season three, that just contained so many Easter eggs and parallels that I never would have come up with on my own. So to answer your question, no, I didn't learn anything new on my own, but I read someone else come up with some really good
ideas.
That's,
but that's a great idea, is to go revisit it armed with the knowledge of all these Easter eggs waiting for you. That's brilliant.
That's great. Yeah, that's really cool. Side note, too, Michael B. Jordan has gone from me watching Friday Night Lights going, hey, the kid from The Wire, to me watching Creed going, hey, the kid from Friday Night Lights, to watching Black Panther saying, Michael B. Jordan.
He has a name.
Yeah. All right, Brian, what have you been watching?
Deadwood and Counterpart. We'll talk about those in spoiler in time. But I took the kids to go see Early Man. And to be honest, I was expecting more from it than I got, partly because the Rotten Tomatoes reviews were a good 10 points higher. But it's important to remember that all Rotten Tomatoes does is tell you the number of people who gave something a generally favorable or generally unfavorable review. And in this case, Jumanji was so much better than Early Man. Jumanji genuinely surprised me and delighted me, got genuine laughs out of me. Early Man, I don't think there was a single surprise the entire time long. It was a bit of a bummer for me.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, and I love their stuff. I love Wallace and Gromit, but I could just tell from the trailer. I'm like,
it's just painting by numbers, and that's fine. That's fine. The kids had a pleasant enough time, but man, I really was delighted and surprised by parts of Jumanji, and it's a shame I didn't get to experience that again.
I'm very excited about Star Wars Rebels, which I've been keeping up on, and the series finale is after we record, so you may be watching or listening to this after it's already aired. I don't know what happens yet, but apparently it's amazing, according to a couple of folks I've talked to who got to see early screeners of it. And my wife's been watching Queer Eye on Netflix, which we mentioned previously on the show, and I have to say they have done a really good job in bringing that concept into 2018. And it's fun. It's fun to watch. I definitely find myself getting sucked into the episodes when she has them up.
Awesome.
I think that show might be next on my list because everyone that I talk to is obsessed with that show right now, which was very surprising to me because no one was begging for it to return or anything like that. And it's come back and has been this huge moment for a lot of people. So I'm going to check that out. Maybe as soon as we're done recording.
Right. Bryce, what are you on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a recommendation from Dan. He writes, hi there, Cord Killers crew. I know American audiences are not really fond of reading subtitles while watching a screen, but I believe I have a recommendation that will make it worthwhile to you. The Ministry of Time, El Ministerio del Tiempo, is a TV show produced by Televisión Española with historic and fantastic elements, and it's finally available on Netflix. It's actually a Netflix original, quote-unquote. It's been licensed. You basically have a group of time cops in charge of keeping history the way it has been and to solve any problems in case someone wants to change the past and make a different present. The main characters include a soldier from 1569, a female college student from 1880, and a modern day paramedic who have to deal with problems that go from the English government trying to stop El Quijote de la Mancha from being published to the early death of El Cid Campeador, creating the need for someone from the ministry to take his place and live his life as it was originally recorded. One of the great things about the show is that the characters can only travel through fixed times through different doors located at the ministry. So if they want to travel to a specific time, they have to go to the closest door previous to the event to solve and wait days or years until the time for fixing the time anomalies arrives. And it's time travel, not time and space travel. So if you want to go to New York in the 1800s, you have to go through time in Spain and then by boat to the New World. Keep up the awesome work. Even if this recommendation isn't mentioned on the show, I believe you'll enjoy it. Our jefe, Dan Campos. Thank you so much, Dan. Yeah, El Ministerio del Tiempo, the Ministry of Time, is on Netflix. There are 8 episodes, and they're kind of long. They're 60 to 70 minutes, so strap in, but it looks like a really fun premise.
So one of the things I mentioned when I was watching Narcos is that everybody gets an acting +3 multiplier upgrade when I don't know what language they're saying and I have to read subtitles, because then, like, if somebody's talking English, I could tell that's bad acting, that's good acting. I have no idea when it's in a foreign language. And I would imagine that with time travel, it's even easier for me to pretend like I won't understand anyone here in America if I go back 300 years, much less in a different language. I'll have to give this one a try.
Yeah.
If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. All right, folks. We actually support ourselves in more ways than just Cord Killers, very obviously.
What?
We appreciate the support on Cord Killers, but we have all kinds of other projects. And Brian, sometimes people want to support us not through Patreon on Cord Killers. This is the opportunity for them to do that these other ways.
Yeah, so we got, I don't know what it's an artifact of, but we got 2 emails this week of people saying, like, can we just give you money? I don't want to do Patreon. I want to sign up for a thing. I don't want an ongoing. I just wait. What's your PayPal? Let me send you money. And in all honesty, we had a team meeting before today's episode, and it's like, look, if you want to support us outside of Patreon, just buy some of our stuff. Buy Tom's book, Bavaria. Buy Pilot X. Buy any of Tom's amazing books, because that'll be something. Yes, Tom won't get 100% of that money, but it will go so much farther and do so much more good. Your actions matter. And if you don't want to do either of those things, literally tell one person right now as you're listening, think of one person you can think of that you think will enjoy the show. And before this episode ends, send them a link to it. Send them along with a sentence saying what you think they'll like about it. That is what matters, not just throwing us mountains of cash. Although yeah, that's pretty cool.
Go buy some covert coins or a plasma lighter X or the Outlaws Vault at scamstuff.com. You'll not only get something, you'll also be helping us directly, and that's fine. Or you can go support Daily Tech News Show. You can go support Night Attack. There's lots of ways to help keep us doing what we're doing. So hopefully that helps. On to the front lines.
Front lines.
So the Oscars were last night. I watched it with a bunch of friends. Enjoyed it. It was fun. It's the Oscars. Nothing different about it, except Netflix had an actual movie nominated, Mudbound. In fact, Mary J. Blige was nominated for her role in it as well. It did not win in its categories, so not a historic night for Netflix there. Netflix documentary about the Russian sports doping scandal called Icarus did win for Best Documentary, but Netflix is kind of known for its documentaries at this point. So as far as cord-cutting services, Brian, treading water at the Oscars this year.
What about the rest of the stuff? Were there any big surprises at the Oscars? I didn't watch it. I think I saw a headline saying that ratings were not great for it. Is that a thing?
I feel like that's every year. Every year, the Oscars, the Super Bowl, everything is like ratings weren't great for this huge event that a lot of people watch. So I don't know. It was fun. Jimmy Kimmel did a great job. They made fun of the fact that they had given out the wrong envelope last year. They brought back the same exact presenters at the end. So they could make good and do it right this time, because it wasn't their fault.
Sure.
So they poked fun at themselves. A lot of political stuff, as always, probably even more so because of the Harvey Weinstein stuff this year. But all in all, it was a typical Oscars. That's what I'd say.
Meanwhile, CBS CEO Leslie Moonves says Star Trek Discovery was serialized because it went to streaming, saying, quote, network television generally works better when it is not serialized, which I thought was really interesting, that I hadn't realized how much of Star Trek's core, what I think of Star Trek, I think of that procedural, that monster of the week, that planet that can talk of the week or whatever. Is that part of the reason? Like, does that make Discovery better or not better? More Star Trek-y or less Star Trek-y?
Well, it certainly makes it different because it's the first Star Trek to do that avowedly for you know, multiple episodes, not just like 2 or 3. I don't know if I buy this, you know, you can't be serialized on broadcast, though. Maybe not on CBS because it's got such an old skewing demo. Maybe that's why. Maybe CBS All Access is younger skewing. I don't know.
Daniel, are you watching the new Star Trek? Are you a Star Trek guy?
I'm not watching the new Star Trek, but I agree with Tom about it. Not necessarily like the Shield was very serialized, and that didn't need to be binged or anything like that. Like this, like that's a strange decision to me. That like, oh, this is because it's released all the time. That then it can be serialized. Like that's strange to me.
Well, so what when I read this full article, I thought about rephrasing it. What if instead of saying Star Trek Discovery had to be serialized because it was streaming, but maybe what if you phrased it as we got to finally experiment with a serialized version of a Star Trek story, and the only way we could get away with it is because we weren't dependent on the advertisers during primetime markets, and because we know that people who subscribe to these things tend to binge stuff, we were allowed to tell a new type of story. When I think about it phrased as in the positive, I feel better about it. And that it's equally accurate.
I mean, yeah, it logically holds together, but I'm looking at This Is Us, which is a serialized huge hit on NBC. So it's not like you can't do it. I'm not sure. Maybe it's right for CBS though. TiVo has hired an outside firm to help it consider strategic options. Usually that's code for we want to sell ourselves. TiVo says it might just go private. Dell did that, where it just took itself off the stock market rather than sell itself. TiVo might merge with a larger entity. It might even acquire other companies smaller than it to make a bigger company out of the parts. The Street has previously reported that multiple buyers are interested in TiVo. So the most likely seems to be that people have been knocking at the door and TiVo's like, all right, let's hire someone to help us entertain these offers.
Yeah, I believe it. Man, I just want TiVo to do well. I still have fond memories of them changing the way I watched television 20 years ago. PlayStation View just updated its service to let users sign on via a laptop or mobile device. Before, you had to have at least one device connected to a TV in order to create an account. View is also going to start adapting its lineup of regional sports networks and local channels based on what city you're in. I gotta tell you, Tom, I have no memory of how I signed up for PlayStation View. Because when I read this, I was like, I don't think I've ever done anything. I guess I went downstairs and clicked on sign up to PlayStation View on my PlayStation, which makes me glad I had one, question mark?
Yeah, but you could do it on a Roku. You could do it on Apple TV. Most people were using it on a TV anyway. So this to me, the bigger deal is not just that you can sign up without a television, but also that it'll adapt its lineup. That was one of the really big advantages Sling TV had from the beginning, is if I went to San Francisco, suddenly I got San Francisco channels on my Sling TV and PlayStation complained that I was outside my market.
Aha.
Comcast has offered to buy European TV provider Sky TV, undermining a longstanding effort by Fox. This would not only stop Sky from ending up at Disney after Disney's acquisition of Fox is approved, but it would bring NBC Universal into Europe in an even bigger way. Also, Sky reached an agreement to provide Netflix shows as part of its service, including the Netflix app on Sky's Now TV boxes. So if you're a traditional subscriber, you'll have Netflix like you do on Comcast services here in the US on your set-top box. But if you're one of Sky's Now TV, which is their Roku, modified Roku service, Netflix app will come there as well.
Is this does Sky have any powerful libraries that or content that they're buying into, or is
this
a distribution?
Well, they get a lot of HBO stuff in their markets. Like they get the rights to show Game of Thrones, for instance, in the UK.
Okay, so this is more buying the pipes than the song.
Yeah, this is very similar to Comcast saying, hey, we're going to put Netflix on the set-top box because then that's one less place people have to go and pay somewhere else. They could combine it all in one bill.
Speaking of Netflix, Netflix announced new parental controls, including the ability to set a pin on particular series or movies. Netflix will also display the maturity rating at the top left as the title begins to play. I have a question that I want to ask you, Daniel. We were all kids that... grew up watching whatever was on HBO, if you had cable or a friend's house or whatever. I have discovered that with my kids, they don't seem to want to veer outside of their established ecosystems. They're comfortable in the Netflix Kids space or whatever. Do you think I don't know why I'm asking you a kid related question. I wonder if our generation just saw a bunch of adult content because there was no filters, and how important those blocks are. Like, do you think kids nowadays are all trying to see grown-up content, and it's the pins that are foiling them? Or is the fact that every kid has a curated playground appropriate for their age enough to keep them there? Does that make sense? I don't know if any of that made sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't know how qualified I am to answer it, because it feels like such a different world from when I was a kid, because I still remember, like, A, we didn't have a ton of channels growing up, and then B, when we did, there for a while there was HBO was just one channel. It wasn't like seven different HBOs and eight different Showtimes or whatever. So there was one HBO channel which like had adult material, and even then it was like a very late night affair. And so your options were like sneak in to catch this window of adult fare on HBO, or watch blurred Skinamax. Like, yeah. Those were the options when we were growing up. And now I just feel like there are adult dangers everywhere for kids. So you need to set up a whole bunch of different boundaries to shield that from kids, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm remembering is, anytime as a kid I stumbled across adult material, it was just that. I stumbled across it. I was like, those are boobs. And then I would get sucked in. In fact, it's probably not healthy that I saw Clockwork Orange in second grade. But none of it was appointment viewing. And it's not like I ever looked at the TV guide of like, I'm gonna sneak in and watch this next Thursday night because it'll have ladies. So I guess that's what I wonder. It seems like a very good solution that I'm wondering if is very much of a problem these days.
Yeah. Well, given what you're saying, as a parent, Brian, I think this is no different than any other rating system. It's there to make parents feel better. There are a lot of parents who don't want their children to accidentally stumble across something, or they get very upset that they catch their kid seeking out something, and so they want to have that control. This is to make those parents feel comfortable, because the parents are the ones who decide whether to renew or cancel a service. I think you're right. I think there are definitely kids out there. There were kids out there when I was a kid who seek out this kind of stuff, and you really can't stop them if they really want to find it, is what I remember and I think is still true. But they're also probably the problem isn't quite as bad as maybe some people think.
But I think you nailed it. What they're really selling is not actual protection. It is what they're really selling is sound sleep for the parents who want to be able to close their eyes and know that, well, if he does see it, it's not my fault because I turned on that pin.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish up with some dispatches from the front. Uli Dig, who says, I used some of the money I saved to support some of my favorite podcasts. I'm the boss of you now. Thanks, boss. Says, first, I want to say that I support Brian's right to be completely, totally, 100% wrong about Black Panther. That movie was awesome.
To clarify, what I said was, I owe it another watch. We just weren't on the same wavelength when I watched it.
Boss supports you in that opinion.
Okay, good.
The question of whether or not people actually save money by cutting the cord or just gain freedom and flexibility seems to come up frequently. Here's my story. Before cutting the cord, I had Dish Network for both internet and cable. It started out as a pretty good deal, but after they jacked the rates up several times, let me put it this way, I decided to cancel my Dish when they started running commercials about how DirecTV customers average $77 a month, and I was paying $115. My internet bill went from $60 a month to $35 a month for the same exact service. I added Sling for $25 a month. I added PBS Passport for $7 a month because I wanted to support them. So I'm paying $25 a month less for internet, and the two services I added to replace cable and satellite total $32 a month. I'm saving $108 a month. And I can easily pause or cancel services whenever I want. I've actually canceled Sling for now between seasons of the shows I really watch, and I plan to switch to Philo as it offers all the channels I want at $16 a month. And yes, I did buy a Roku, and I already had Netflix and Amazon Prime subscriptions, which I did not count in my totals, but they add up to a lot less than $108 a month.
Fantastic, man. I love hearing that. We also got an email from Blair in West Hollywood saying, hey, guys, thanks for all the entertainment. Just dropping a note on how I budget some of my TV viewing. I use gift cards for Hulu, Netflix, iTunes, and prepay a year ahead. That way I could budget for all my streaming and never have to worry about how much I'm spending on my cord cutting fees. Hopefully this might be help others to budget as well. That's a smart one. And we previously talked about you could use services like privacy.com to set up a burner credit card so that once it runs out, you're not stuck paying a monthly fee.
We also got David Pick in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Thought this was worth sharing. I'm now a paying customer of YouTube TV. I relied on the DVR feature to record the 90th Oscars. Apparently not many bothered to watch. Well, that's the headlines anyway. Picture quality was good, and I was happy. YouTube was smart enough to extend the recording time without any input from me. That allowed me to see the whole event. I thought for sure it would stop at the three-hour mark, and I'd have to Google the Best Picture winner, but it worked great. I was happy to see Shape of Water win Best Picture, and I'm glad I drove over 45 miles one way to see it in a theater before the Oscars to know it's a great film.
And Jamil says The Expanse is now in UHD on Amazon Prime Video. Might be better to wait than to watch it week over week on Sci-Fi. Allow me to point out that that assuming new episodes will do the exact same thing, it's available the very next morning. Just buy the season on Amazon and you won't be able to watch it live with everybody else. But the next morning you'll wake up and there'll be a new Expanse episode waiting for you.
Oh, fantastic. Good to know. Daniel, I'm curious, what services do you rely on for watching your TV?
Amazon Prime, HBO Go, Netflix, and I'm committing a terrible sin. I still have a cable subscription.
See, and this is a big misconception. We are fans of watching what you want, when you want, on whatever device you please. And if that device is with an all-you-can-eat buffet piped right into your television, ain't nothing wrong with that.
If it works for
it's
you.
It's still important to me to catch either whatever sport is going on or whatever is going on in HGTV. Those are the two things that like I want to put on that comfort viewing, and having cable allows me to do that.
Well, and when you look at things like Sling TV, YouTube TV, Hulu, DirecTV Now, do they just don't quite appeal to you yet?
No, and I also need to do more research. Like I'm sure if I looked at what I was spending on different things, because I also pay for Hulu and Prime and Sling and a bunch of other things, and I just haven't done the research that I should be doing to figure out what is the best thing for me, because I'm Luddite probably. This is like an hour and a half into me being on this podcast, but like I don't belong here because I'm an old man. I'm a very old man.
No, not at all. You're like representative of like more than a third of the audience, I have a feeling. Okay, people are good. Like, yeah, I got a bunch of these services. It's so hard to keep up. I don't know.
Where can people see more of your amazing work, sir?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at @DOB_INC. And don't look for me anywhere else. I am a staff writer for bunnyears.com. It's spelled exactly how it sounds.
Bunnyears.com. That's Macaulay Culkin's new site, right?
Yeah. It just launched last week. It was on the Tonight Show last Friday to talk about it. And we're doing some really weird, silly, fun stuff. So check it out.
Fantastic. That's bunnyears.com.
Yeah. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack. Also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will cut your cords again next week.
Hey guys, Brian and Tom here. Guess what? New message at the end of the video. You got video? Are you watching the video? Look, the point is we appreciate every single one of your bits of patronage. That's why the $5 patrons are appearing right now on the video screen. Right, Tom?
That's right. Even if this isn't new 4 years from the time we're recording it, we still appreciate you greatly for supporting the show. And if you want your name in lights, if you've always dreamt of that moment, go to patreon.com/courtkillers.
Hey, listen, kid, you got a great name. You want to see your name in pixels? I can make it happen.
And we mean pixels that are bright on a screen, not the movie.
Thanks, guys. You're the best.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.